What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, finance, business, and of course, mental health. It's a Black Men Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. And on today's episode of Black Men Sundays, we're diving into wealth building strategies and real world financial empowerment with Will Harvey III. This brother is the founder and managing partner of Harvey Capital, where he's built a track record of deploying millions in real estate investments while helping everyday investors earn passive income through smart, principled strategies. So you know we're going to have to get some tips for sure. And from starting in mortgages to scaling private lending and investing diverse real estate assets, Will combines hands-on experience with practical insights you can apply. He's also deeply guided by his faith, showing that financial success and purpose can go hand in hand. So today, he's here to share his journey, his lessons, and his actionable advice for anyone looking to grow their wealth the right way. So without further ado, Will Harvey III, coming from Richmond, Virginia, brother, how are you today?
I'm doing really good. Thanks so much for having me on. That was quite the intro.
Yeah, man. Well, let's go on and get started, man. So can you walk us through your journey from starting in mortgages to managing millions in private capital today?
I got started in the mortgage business in late 2015. This is after I was a double college dropout. So I dropped out of University of South Carolina originally because I needed to get sober. And that was one of the best decisions I ever made. And then the second dropout was after I was, after I got sober, I had walked on and I was playing football at a school in Ohio, and I had double hip surgery, and that was sort of the end of that. So I came home and was flirting around with going back and finishing my degree at a local school in Northern Virginia where I lived. But I ended up just wanting to go out and get my career going. And a family friend offered me a shot in the mortgage business. So I started out as a loan officer assistant and really just learned the ropes for about a year. And then I jumped out into production as a mortgage loan officer in late 2016. So I did that 17, 18, 19. It was an awesome run. I was able to buy a few rental properties, and also learn that I don't like owning rental properties. And that's ultimately how I got to where I am today, where I'm lending. That's the side of the aisle I would much prefer to be on as opposed to being the operator. But yeah, so I did that. And Once I was done with the mortgage business, I started a house flipping company with a partner and dove headlong into that. And I was flipping houses and also investing in I was investing passively into apartment syndications, mobile home park syndications, and that sort of thing. And I realized that I really liked being a passive investor. I've done a few active deals. There's a few that I still own with partners where I'm one of the general partners, but I really have gravitated towards the financial side of things as opposed to, the operator side of things, the real estate side of things. And that leads me to, in 2023, I started my first small friends and family fund. I still run it. It's closed though. And that's how I got into hard money. So someone approached me that I used to work with, and he's like, "Hey, I got this borrower that makes great money, but he can't qualify for a loan. He's putting 75% down on a house and he needs a 25% loan. Are you interested?" And before he got done asking me, I was like, "Yeah, that's a no-brainer." 25% LTV, first lien position, no-brainer. So we had some funds laying around from our, you know, that real estate fund that I started, and I used that, and we just did more and more in the coming years. And last year I decided to start a dedicated fund specifically for hard money. And that's what a lot of my time goes to now.
Man, that's great information. And I'm glad you mentioned passive income and hard money lending, because that leads right to my next question. So what's your approach to passive income, and why do you believe hard money lending is a powerful tool for building wealth?
I like hard money because, you know, I've flipped houses. I've flipped a dozen or so houses. I've owned rentals. It's a lot of work. And there's a lot of headaches. There's a lot of things that go into being a landlord that people don't think about. They think it's just this passive thing that you sit around and collect a check. And it can be. And if you have the right systems, it can be. But, you know, I just didn't like all the headaches that came along with that. So that's why for me, being a hard money lender, I'm able to lend money and sort of vicariously live through these real estate investors who are doing really cool projects. But I don't have to be the one swinging the hammer and dealing with contractors and fixing toilets and managing tenants and all that stuff. So that's why I like lending.
And just for the brothers out here that don't know what hard money lending is, can you just define that for us?
Yeah, sure. So hard money lending is a product that fills a gap in the market. So when you're buying a property, you can either pay cash or you can go to a bank or a lender and get a loan. But the issue is that for those that don't have cash or don't, you know, a property that is not in lendable condition is not going to be able to get a bank loan or a traditional type of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac conventional loan. So that's where hard money comes in. It fills the gap where, you know, if a property is in bad condition, needs a lot of work, that's where a hard money lender would come in. So it's going to be a higher interest rate. There's typically going to be more fees and points up front. But this is a short-term loan that you use when you're either buying a property that you want to fix up and sell as a flip, or that you need to buy with a hard money loan, fix it up, and get it to the point where you can refinance into a long-term, you know, traditional type of loan.
How do you evaluate real estate deals to ensure that you're growing and, you know, you'll be able to have some capital preservation?
As the real estate investor, when you're investing in real estate, when I was doing this with my partner, we had some seed money that we used actually from our very first flip. We made about $50,000, and that was, we rolled that and started a company together, and we had that money that you're using to go out and run a house flipping business. But obviously that's not going to go very far. We were spending, you know, $3,000-$4,000 a month on marketing, on you know, all the different things that we had in place, all the services and software. All that stuff was, I don't know, $3,000-$4,000. A lot of it was marketing, but, you know, so you have this finite amount of money, and that's where, you know, that's why we used hard money. When I was flipping houses, I always used hard money as a borrower. And so you want to make sure you have enough money to run your business. And then what you don't have is where you would start talking to hard money lenders or, you know, capital partners. There's, you know, equity, and then there's debt. The equity is the money that goes into forming the business. It's the down payment you would put on something, but then the debt is what you go out and borrow from the bank or the you know, hard money lender or whoever it may be. That is something that you owe, and you know, that's, so you just have to balance. You have to have enough equity to play the game, but you know, you're gonna have a problem scaling unless you get beyond your own capital. Everyone's gonna run out of money at some point, and that's where, you know, lenders and banks come into play.
Wow, that's great information, because you know many people fear losing money in real estate. So what lessons can help them manage risk and make better smart moves?
The biggest thing that people can do to put themselves in a position to win in real estate is to make sure that you know the value of whatever you're buying and that you buy it at a good price. You know, there's a cliche saying in real estate that's you make money when you buy, not when you sell. And that is so true. The first flip that I ever did back in 2019, me and my partner made every mistake in the book that you could think of. We overimproved the property. We dealt with contractor delays. The market shifted a little bit because we were just, the rehab took so long. But despite all that, we bought it at an absolute, phenomenal price, and that saved us. And while we were disappointed, we thought we were going to make, closer to $70,000 or $80,000 on it. And we only made $50,000. That's a whole lot better than losing money or even breaking even, And when you're conservative and you go after deals with a lot of meat on the bone, and you're conservative on your after repair value, your ARV, that's how you make sure you don't lose money.
If someone has limited capital, but they want to get in the game, what's the first step you'd recommend to start investing in real estate?
Figuring out your superpower or your skill set. What is it? Are you able to, are you the one that is really good at marketing? You're able to go out there and turn over a bunch of rocks and find deals that you can, you can buy at a great price. If that's you, then I would lean into that and I would find a money partner. That's how my, when I was flipping houses, the partner, that I worked with, that's how we started working together. He had this opportunity. It was a phenomenal opportunity, but he didn't have the funds or the knowledge of lending to go out and, he just didn't know how to go out and find the funds to do it. So he reached out to me. We had known each other for a few years and he knew I was in the mortgage business and understood finance a little bit more. And, it was a perfect partnership. He was good at finding deals. He was good at, he had a background in construction. So, that was great because I don't know how to do anything in construction. So it was a wonderful, marriage where, I knew the finance side of things. He knew the, the marketing and the construction side of things, and our skill sets complemented each other.
You being the founder and managing partner of Harvey Capital, how has that been a challenge? How were you able to establish that? And how has faith kept you in control of running that business?
So I actually established it in 2018 was when I formed the entity, and it was originally meant to, I was trying to go out and be an apartment syndicator where, you go out and you raise funds from investors and you find apartment buildings to buy and you buy them with a group of people in what's known as a syndication. So that was my original plan. And, it just didn't work out. I was sort of a failed syndicator where I just couldn't find anything as deep of a discount as I wanted to buy it for. And I just realized that, I was trying to find these deeply discounted, properties, these deals that just didn't exist. And that was a blessing in disguise because I learned since then that I just don't like being the operator. I don't like operating real estate. I much prefer being in a passive position more as an investor, or a lender than I do as an operator. So, that's how Harvey Capital was born. And like I said, over the years, I just slowly, migrated to the finance side of things. And that was 2022, 2023 is really when I started picking up with it again and using that management company to start managing the funds that we have and all that. Now your question about faith, you asked me how I incorporated into things. Is that what you asked?
Yeah. Well, I'm more on the mindset, concept of faith. And because I'm pretty sure, you know, you're not riding the wave every day. I'm pretty sure you've had some dark days or some not so great days. So I know that's where faith kicks in. But a lot of people that I talk to, their faith is so strong that it doesn't matter. So I just want to know just how faith integrates into your life and into your business practices.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple years ago, yeah. There absolutely have been ups and downs and a couple years ago, my wife and I really committed to leaning into the Lord and growing our faith and just trying to outwardly shine the light of Jesus with everyone we come in contact with. And I've really tried to do that. I hesitate talking to people about my faith, and it's not something that comes naturally to me. I'm sort of introverted to begin with. And then on the topic of that, I kind of shell up sometimes, but I really have prayed to be bolder about my faith. And, you know, in my investor updates, I started signing my name, you know, instead of like sincerely or something like that, I write in Christ, comma, Will Harvey. So I'm always trying to put Jesus on the scoreboard, as they say, and really just live in a biblical manner, run my different ventures that I manage, business ventures, run those in a biblical manner, treat people in a biblical manner, and just really, you know, try to be more and more like Jesus and focus on that and lean into prayer when things are tough or when I come to a crossroads, come to a big decision I need to make. In the past, I have sometimes acted impulsively, and I'm sort of naturally inclined to be the type of person that is, you know, ready, fire, aim, instead of ready, aim, fire. Now I recognize that about myself, and I try to just really, really go and pray on those bigger decisions and take time to process things. That's what I try to do now. And it's really helped.
All right, fellas, the stage is open. It's Black Men Sundays. If you have any questions, say your name, city, and state. Let's go.
Hey, my name is Kalali Dogbe, out of Calvert County, Maryland. In one of your comments, you said that you actually prefer using a hard money lender as your lender of choice. Is there any particular reason why, or is it just you couldn't get funds from like banks, or is there any particular reason why you prefer going the hard money lender route?
I would say that it just depends on the condition of the property. So if you're trying to buy a property that doesn't need much work, you're going to be better off going and talking to a bank or a traditional lender. It's going to be more involved. It's going to be more of a pain in the rear end to go to a bank or a conventional lender. But you're going to get a much lower interest rate. And I should say that really applies to rental properties. So if you're just buying something to flip, I would say that a traditional loan is almost never going to work because they don't want a loan. You know, a traditional lender wants to make a loan and collect the interest on it for a long time. They don't want to make a loan and have it be paid back in 6 months. Like if you flip a property and it takes 6 months, you're going to be paying that off when you sell it. So that's where hard money comes into play. where these loans are intentionally designed to be short-term loans. They don't have any prepayment, at least ours, don't have any prepayment penalties. And we want people to pay them off soon because then we can go out and redeploy the capital and charge more points and fees. And so that's what we want. And then with hard money as well, you can sort of act as if you're a cash buyer with hard money. If you have a good relationship with a hard money lender, it's as good as cash. I mean, hard money lenders, we can close in 2 days. If someone called us and they had all their ducks in a row, and you know, the two biggest things that we need are clear title. So we need to be able to get a title policy, title insurance, and then we need insurance on the property, homeowner's insurance, you know, to protect it from, you know, a hurricane or something like that. As long as we have those two things, we can close in days. So it's much faster, and you can potentially use that to your advantage. If you're dealing with a seller who wants to close quickly, you can use that as leverage to get, you know, a better deal. You know, if someone is looking at two offers and one of them is a lower offer, but they are saying that they can close in 7 days or 14 days, I mean, that's going to get someone's attention, as opposed to someone who comes in and it's a 30 or a 45 day close and there's a financing contingency. You know, so hard money is very useful in that situation where you need to close quickly.
Got you. Yeah. I'm trying to situate you in the, just like in my mind, cause I'm thinking cause I've been circling like the real estate market for a while. I haven't made any investments on any properties, anything like that, but I've been giving it a lot of thought, and we're always looking at properties and different things like that, thinking about, hey, maybe we should, you know, invest in another property or something. So I'm trying to think of like, what would be the ideal situation in which I should call like a hard money lender? Like if I was looking at a property right now, but I knew I didn't have the money to cover it, is that when I should be calling a hard money lender, or is it more of like, I need to go find, or I need to have like a certain amount of funds already saved up, and then like a hard money lender will cover like whatever I don't have?
Hard money lenders are all going to be different. There's national hard money lenders like Kiavi, and their process is a little bit more rigid and involved than a local hard money lender. So a local hard money lender in somewhere in the market that you're in is probably going to be the best bet. And I would say general things that all hard money lenders follow, but everybody's a little bit different in what they require and what they need. And I would say for us, the biggest thing on my end is the deal. You know, if you brought a killer home run deal, and as long as your credit isn't 500, then you know, if it's a killer deal and you're able to buy it at a really good price, that alleviates a lot of risk, and a good lender should recognize that. And you know, there are people we do loans for that we're able to come up with 100% of the purchase price, less points and fees. They have to pay that at the front end. But you know, if it's a phenomenal deal, then there are hard money lenders out there that can cover the entire purchase price.
How would I go about finding hard money lenders? Could I just do y'all have like relationships with like the chambers of commerce in the area, or what are some ways we could find like in contact with them?
I would go on Google. I would use ChatGPT. I would just start searching online for, you know, hard money lenders in XYZ city, you know, okay, and just see who's around you, and then start calling them and just tell them where you're at in the process. Say, hey, I'm newer to this, but here's where I am. Here's my plan. I mean, if someone came to me and they have a rock solid plan in place and all they have to do is find a deal, then it just becomes, you know, you can kind of get everything over to them and start to get the process rolling before you find a live deal. And then once you have a live deal, assuming it's a good deal, it should flow through a lot smoother.
And so for you, do you only specialize in like real estate deals, or do you do lending for other kind of like business ventures as well?
We're just real estate. But I do know of guys that, I know guys that will do business funding and that sort of thing. But usually it has to be an established business. And, you know, if it's a newer business, then I don't know who you're going to get as a lender. You might have to get, you know, like some higher net worth individual to back you either with a loan or investment in your company, where they give you certain amount of dollars for X percent of your company. You know, that's probably the route you would have to go if it's a newer type of business.
So that'd be more like an angel investor or something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. Okay. Yeah.
You spoke about a partnership when you were talking about, you know, how you were able to kind of transition into hard money lending. Could you speak a little bit more about how important having a good partner, having a good set of partners is in building a successful business?
Yeah, it's everything, especially when you're just getting started, because you have your skill set and your experience and your background, but there may be gaps there. Like we can't do everything, you know, like I was saying about my partner when I was flipping houses. I had a finance background, but I didn't have a construction background. So the thought of doing a rehab budget, the thought of doing a rehab on a property scared me to death. But for him, he could do that in his sleep. So that was something where it was great to partner, because, you know, I had a ton of trepidation about the renovation costs and how to properly budget for them and all that, but he had no issue with that. And then on the other side, he didn't know how to get a loan. He didn't know who to talk to. Whereas I had a lot of relationships in that space. So, you know, if you're trying to get out and get started in something like real estate, where it's capital intensive, you know, you need to have construction knowledge, I would strongly recommend people try to find people to partner with, you know, because it's a great way to just scale a lot faster.
Are you concerned at all with like the, you know, kind of the increasing rates of like, let's say like interest rates in the housing market, housing prices, lack of supply in the housing markets, and just how difficult it is for like first time homeowners to buy a home? Like, I think I was talking to somebody today and they said like the average age now for somebody to buy their first home is 40. So is that something that you pay attention to? Is that something that concerns you? Does that impact what you do with your business at all?
Yeah, it does. I get this question a good bit. It definitely does. You know, I look at national headlines and statistics and data, and I'm, you know, I have a pretty good pulse on what's going on. But also, you know, I have learned that real estate is so localized and just very, it just varies market to market. So, you know, what's going on in a market out in Southern California right now might be completely different than what's going on in Richmond, Virginia, where I focus. So, you know, I try to really stay locked into the market that I'm in or the markets that I'm in and focus on those. Because it's just, the analogy I would use is like, you can look at national averages and those are those are good. If you're one wanting to just have an understanding of what's going on at a macro level, or two, if you're operating nationally, then you should know that stuff. But if you're only in one or a few markets, then it does you a lot better to have a good understanding of what's going on there. Because if someone, you know, it's like the analogy I would use is if someone came to you and asked you, what's the temperature in the United States? You would say, well, where? Like in Arizona, it's hot, but you know, up in New England and New York, it's colder, you know? So, and that's how it is in real estate. Some markets are doing really well. Some are not doing as well. And when you look at national averages, it just kind of blends all that together, and it might not be as telling as local data in the market that you're in.
Definitely, man. Definitely, man. So, Will Harvey, are you enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays, man?
I am. I really am. This is fun.
What's one mistake most people make when trying to earn passive income?
Well, I can tell you a mistake that I made personally, and that's getting involved with the wrong group. So when you're trying to invest in a deal passively, you're relying on someone else to manage it, to run it, and to get to the outcome that you desire, which is, you know, a predictable and steady stream of income. There was a deal that I invested in back in 2020. It was with these guys in an apartment deal. And there were a few phone calls that we had before I pulled the trigger and put money into that one. And looking back in hindsight, there were just a lot of red flags that I should have been smarter about and recognized. So I'm glad I went through it, and it wasn't catastrophic. You know, you should always invest what you can afford to lose and nothing beyond that. And luckily I did that. This wasn't my last, you know, this wasn't my last $50 that I invested. So, but there were some red flags, some blinking red flags that I just, for whatever reason, chose to ignore. And I even remember at the time hearing them and being like, that was kind of weird. They said that on the phone call, and I still moved forward, and you know, I shouldn't have. So the deal ended up, it's not the worst outcome. It's back on track. There were two groups involved, and they partnered. They were basically two real estate syndication groups that were running this, and the partnership between them broke down. And one of the groups was just, they were terrible. They were just incompetent and just never did what they said. And the other group, they were great. They're awesome guys. They're believers, and they're wonderful, but they lacked experience. So you had these older guys who were just not good fiduciaries, not good stewards of other people's money. And then you had these younger guys that were, but they just didn't have the experience. But I will say that the younger guys, they ended up moving on site to the property to foresee renovations and get it back on track. And that was something that I really tipped my hat to them of, you know, for doing, because that's, you know, they could have easily just walked away from it and been like, you know what, we failed and we overpromised and underdelivered and we're really sorry, but that's how it goes sometimes. And they didn't do that. They rolled up their sleeves and, you know, it hasn't paid a distribution in years, but it looks like it's on track to get back to where it needs to be. So to sum all that up, that's a live example. And to answer your question, it's to say that you want to really understand who you're getting involved with, and you want to make sure they're the right steward of your capital.
Okay, great information, man. And what's one mindset shift that you believe separate successful investors from those who struggle?
I think a big one is, like, I've been going to real estate networking events and things like that for years. And you'll see people going to these events over and over and over. And, you know, they sit in the front row and they write notes, and but they never jump out and they never get started. And they never, it's like they're too afraid to fail. They're too afraid to take the leap. And, you know, I think that you can get paralysis by analysis when you just think that, you know, I if I just learn a little bit more information, I just need to learn this and then I'll be ready. And then I'll, like, no one is ever ready to get started. You'll never, I mean, the more that I'm in real estate, the longer that I'm in real estate, I realize how little I know about real estate. there's so many things and so many different ways to make money in real estate, that when I hear something new, I'm like, man, that is just, I never would have thought of that in a million years. That's such a cool strategy. And I just realized that I know absolutely nothing about real estate. So, you know, I think that the ones that get out and aren't afraid to fail, I'm not saying take, you know, take risks that can lead to a catastrophic outcome. I mean, you got to be smart and you got to know, when you're buying a deal at a good price, you gotta be perfect on your analysis. You gotta know what you're doing there, and how to evaluate what a property is worth. But you know, all the other stuff can be learned, and you're gonna learn the most from failing and from making mistakes and going through the quote unquote school of hard knocks. That's how you learn the most. And you know, there's a good quote. It's I got it here on my computer. It's action produces information. I love that quote, you know, because a lot of times, you know, I'll get stuck where I'm like, I want to do this new thing or I want to try this new strategy and I'm not really sure where to start. But then I remember that quote and it's, hey, action produces information. I just need to start. And it may not be, I may not be starting where, you know, I'm doing everything how I need to be doing. I might make a bunch of mistakes, but that's going to lead to information and that's going to lead to, you know, data that I'm going to be able to use in the future and get better and get smarter. And then I will know what I'm doing and I'll figure it out.
And what belief about success or about making money had to change for you before your life in business truly leveled up?
This might sound corny, but and I've had this for a while. I wouldn't say that I feel like this was a little bit innate with me. But you know, I try to treat things like a numbers game. And I know that if I want to flip, you know, however many houses in a year, then let's reverse engineer that. And how many sellers am I going to need to talk to? How many offers am I going to need to write to get, you know, the however many accepted to lead to the outcome that I want? So when I figured out how to be more task oriented instead of goal oriented and result oriented, you know, you can't control the results. You can say, I want to achieve this outcome. I want to flip 10 houses in a year, but that is an outcome. That's not, you know, that's not going to lead to anything. If you just say that's my goal and, you know, I'm just going to try to achieve that. You need to break that down into the bite-sized steps that it takes to get there. How many mailers is it going to take to achieve that? How many mailers are you going to have to send out? How many Google ads, you know, how much are you going to have to spend in Google ads to get, you know, the right amount of leads to ultimately end up getting that outcome? So I like to break it down into tasks and really focus on the tasks, focus on the process, because the process will lead to the outcome that you want. But just wishing and just writing down goals and then hoping you achieve them is is not going to work.
Great information, man. And my final question for you, for people that check out your website and they're interested in your income strategy, how can they contact you?
They can go to the website. They can book a time to talk, or they can just shoot me an email. It's will@harvey-capital.com.
Nice. Okay. Sounds good, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. Will Harvey III, Harvey Capital, came and tore the stage up on Black Man Sundays, man. Many blessings to you.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate you having me on, Corey.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things.